Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of November, recording at 7:23 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this is the big picture, long-term outlook, and I am recording before I've actually completed and posted comment of the day, because I wanted to do so before I get too weary. But now, first, here just a quick review of the week and the day. Stock markets are very, very firm, generally. There's no doubt that global liquidity has won the day here for the bulls. There is no doubt that a number of investors are hastily undergoing a rapid re-rating of the United States after all the fears and talk about the so-called head and shoulders pattern on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is not being taken out. I beg your pardon, is not playing out. In other words, it's not proving to be an H&S top in here at all. Now, what I've mentioned on gold earlier several times is that when you get a recognizable pattern like that, that a lot of people talk about, and then it fails, the market does usually go in the opposite direction quite smartly. And that's what we saw with gold. You know, it broke down, just was breaking a little bit of support near the 460 level, couldn't maintain it. I think it dipped down to 455 and then swung right around and shot up to today's close, 496 on the spot bullion price, and it certainly hasn't stopped. So I think really we're likely to see a little bit more of a spurt in the U.S. market between now and year end, and that may well pull money, a little bit of money, away from some of the other markets, not least because American investors were quite rightly and wisely among the big exporters of capital in terms of picking up other markets. Exporters of capital? No. Let me rephrase that and say, in terms of international diversification, by buying funds mostly within the U.S. that invested overseas. So they had been major buyers along with Europeans, and the U.S. has really been showing relative strength ever since we started to get those upward dynamics in mid-October, and I think that will continue for a little while longer. Should one be playing that? Well, you certainly could do so, but let me go back to I'll come back to this point, but just firm stock markets generally overall. Now, bonds just messing around. There's nothing really to review here on the week. In terms of currencies, dollar still in a trading range here. There's no big story in here at the moment. It is making a little bit of heavy weather on the upside following this breakout. And interest rate expectations are a key factor here. More on that in a moment. In terms of the metal markets, well, we've only had 3 days activity here this week, and it's been pretty good though, in that the gains have been held. What we had a little bit of a wobble on was it Monday or Tuesday, and prices firmed right up again, and I think are almost certainly going to be strong on Monday. I expect gold bullion to take out the 500 level next week, and probably early on. And in terms of everything else, well, not much else, not a great deal else going on. Okay, big picture themes then. First, stock markets. Yes, the technical bull that began in March of 2003 is long in the tooth, but It's still kicking up its heels here a bit and does look like it is going to run on into the first quarter of next year. I can't see anything that's likely to disrupt this, as I've said before. Now, inevitably, as markets pick up, people are starting to become a little bit more bullish about next year. And any forecast is in with a chance. There are no knowers here. We're in the educated guessing business. I will let the charts guide me on this, but my strategy overall will be to take some money off the table. I won't do this. I probably won't do this in my core positions, unless they do something silly on the upside, which I don't expect. But I will do it in some leveraged positions that I've added on, and I included another here today. I will be shortly posting. You can already see it and go into the chart library and see it. See the chart of today's action in the Topix Banks Index. And we had a nice upward dynamic today. This is just a normal consolidation, and I expect that to move higher. So I bought a bit of Nikkei in here. But I will get back to my strategy. I will be reducing some leverage. I hope to not have to worry about that. I hope to run profits into the first quarter of the new year, but obviously we'll, as I say, I'll let the charts guide me on this. Now, in terms of the really big picture theme, excuse me, the really big picture themes, there are two that dominate overall. One is the supply and elasticity plus rising demand for the resources. This is a unique situation in terms of most investors' experience. We had a pale version of it back in the 1970s. This is much, much bigger, as I've mentioned many times in the past. So this is just a red hot theme, and all we really need to worry about here are the moves that some of the little, well, not little, they can be quite large, but the medium term swings in this. And these can be anything from a correction of a few weeks to a correction lasting, well, seldom will they go over 2 years, but you could even see some of up to 3 years from time to time. I'm talking about over the next 20 years here now. And you'll get the longer corrective phases within the secular bull theme when, not surprisingly, markets have gone ballistic on the upside in a climactic acceleration. If you want to see an example of that, go into the chart library and look at the weekly chart of nickel and see what it did in 2002 and 2003, and that set it up for a huge long consolidation, and it's probably now completed, or I've been saying that I felt it had completed the downside phase, and we're on our way back up to the higher side of the range. Let's say that's a consolidation that's getting on to close to 2 years now. So that's really very much the longer variety, but that's what we need to worry about from time to time when the news is so good in some of the resources that they just are get too far ahead of themselves and are then logically subject to a significant pullback. Now, does anything qualify in this sense here today? Not really, in terms of a nickel type lengthy consolidation. What about copper? Well, that's the first one that would spring to mind as a in terms of a move that appears to be running ahead of itself, but it's still pretty orderly. Staircase step sequence consolidating along the way. So I think it would be premature, certainly, to expect the long pullback and say 2 year type consolidation. Ditto zinc, very, very powerful here right now, but Still consolidating enough to not be seriously overextended. Now, oil had become a little bit frothy, as you know, on that hurricane news and getting up to the $70 level. That certainly set it up for a medium-term consolidation. I've really been thinking in terms of a few months, and as I've been saying recently, I wouldn't be surprised if we were close to a bottom. If I'm too bullish in terms of that time frame, then we would mess around and go a little bit lower here. And but basically, I don't think that the move on the upside was so strong that it necessitates a much longer consolidation. So we need to, as I say, watch for those cyclical swings and roundabouts, and certainly precious metals are nowhere near overextended enough to cause that kind of a move. For instance, I maintain that gold in September only entered the second psychological perception phase of its bull market when it broke out on the upside against just about every other currency going. And silver has been consolidating. That was another example. Look at that on the weekly chart. And you'll see that huge acceleration that we had in 2003 and set it up for a very, very lengthy consolidation, which it's now completing. And I think we're seeing the launch of the next upward wave in silver. So this resources area, I expect to really, really remain extremely interesting for a long time to come. So I'm firmly in the camp that this is secular rather than cyclical. And just to repeat the key point on that, this is because of the supply and elasticity problem. And yes, people say, yeah, but come on, look, there are a lot more materials going to be coming on stream. Well, not as much as some people expect or forecast. And partly because of bottlenecks in terms of being able to get being able to get people to work in these industries, there hasn't been much recruitment, and so there are fewer experienced personnel around. Mining community is inherently conservative, and then there are the various environmental problems and hurdles that have to be dealt with, and so I think we'll see backwardations being the norm more often than they are than contangos for a number of these. Now, the other side of the equation, of course, is the demand. And really, tell me when we had another China with India coming up fast, also in terms of demand. And it just has not happened before, not on a scale anything remotely like this. And you know, there's less of this stuff around. A lot of the ore bodies are significantly depleted. So I expect this, as I say, to run and run and run. And the only thing that would change that would be a really serious global recession, and I'm not forecasting that anytime soon, although we might well see. We could see some economies slip into recession or close to it next year on a worst case scenario. Okay, the other huge theme is the emerging markets, and what are the reasons for that? Well, because if we have the secular bull market on Wall Street, which I maintain we're in, and I have long defined as a generational long process of valuation contraction because people realize they're no longer in the 1990s. And so I look really for a ceiling on the S&P stock market index up around the, say, 1500 to, and that's well above current levels, the 1500 to say 1575 region for the S&P index, which is currently at 1268 on today's close. And that will represent, in my opinion, the equivalent of the 1025 glass ceiling that we saw on the Dow from the late 60s right on into the early 1980s. Now, against that background, I think that investors will be putting a great deal more money into overseas markets. That's exactly the pattern that we saw during the 1970s and the 1980s. Now, if I'm too conservative on that, and many people either think I am or hope that I am, that if I'm too conservative on that, that's because we get so much liquidity sloshing around that stock markets are floated upwards by that liquidity, in which case the resources story, of course, will go absolutely haywire. Led by the precious metals, certainly the precious metals will be key players in terms of the relative strength. And I think they're going to be plenty good, plenty strong anyway, and I do expect to see a lot of liquidity in the system for quite some time. Now, in terms of the emerging markets, the ones that are obvious candidates first, but I have to put in the caveat here, which is not a hedge, but to say subject to governance. And you get bad governance, and even the best stories, or what ought to be the best stories, pale. And you see examples of that all the time. You saw the way Russia wobbled with the political changes, the move against the former head of Lukos, can't remember, but you know exactly what I mean. And you see it with Venezuela now with the Chavez regime. So again, on emerging markets, governance is everything, but for the most part, I think we will the examples of really bad governance will be an exception, and some of them will prove temporary, as possibly the Russian situation may be, at least in terms of terrifying investors. Now, when you can combine the emerging market story with the resources story, you've got a pretty interesting situation. So that's one reason why these Central and South American stock markets have done so exceptionally well. The governance risk there is that you do have quite a few left-wing regimes, and we have to factor that in and watch out for that. The Asian emerging markets, for the most part, don't have the resources plays. There are some major soft commodity players such as Thailand and Indonesia, but for the most and Indonesia, of course, also has the oil, but for the most part, we're really relying on these hardworking populations, very capitalist oriented people. And that's likely to be the driver. Governance, example of bad governance, I would cite China, where the governance is fine in terms of producing the actual growth, but people who have invested in China have been very disappointed, because really with a communist capitalism, bit of an oxymoron, as I've said before, we only make money if they want us to make money. So if you want to play the China growth story, and China growth is a great story, then I would only do it through Chinese companies that are listed, registered and listed in Hong Kong, Singapore, or the United States. My favorite, very favorite stock market, as you're probably well aware, for the very long term, is India. Not a resources play, but it's a third world country with some first world companies and the democracy. I'm not going to go into this, or I'll be broadcasting all night. But I've written so much about it, and will continue to post many interesting reports on India and to comment on it. But that's my top pick for the very long term. But it's done so well over the last couple of years that I wouldn't be surprised if India didn't underperform some markets next year. I'm not going to be selling out of my core position in India, but I'm prepared not to see, psychologically, not to see the sorts of returns that we had in 2003 and 2004 and 2005, over the last 3 years. It's been an absolutely phenomenal performance. So if India did see a lengthy year, 18-month, two-year consolidation, we couldn't fall over backwards in terms of total shock. It probably won't be that long, but it's due for a breather sometime soon. Maybe that doesn't happen. I saw a new high on the Sensex today. Maybe that doesn't happen until we get into the new year. Okay. I'll also mention among the developed country primarily industrialized stock markets, there are two absolute standouts, and that's Japan and South Korea. You could put Singapore a distant third, great, great governance, but Singapore is a small story, and so therefore I don't think it's going to attract the wall of money. It'll certainly attract local money, and I would expect it to do very well, as it has done since March of 2003. But so it's a fine story. But the ones that I think are going to capture the public imagination most are the ex-secular bear markets, and that's in Japan, where we now are in a secular bull market, and ditto South Korea. Absolutely outstanding for the next decade or more. Now, among the developed country resources markets, Australia and Canada, by a country mile, absolutely outstanding. Australia has sensational governance. I'm less familiar with the governance in Canada, but needless to say, we've got a mature democracy here, and it's a hugely exciting resources story. So these are absolutely standout markets and likely to remain so for quite some time. Going back to the, and I apologize for jumping around on these, I do all these off the cuff, and I know it can be a little bit confusing from time to time, but going back to the emerging market theme again, then we have the Eastern European markets. Now, with their flat taxes, their low wage costs, the hardworking population anxious to catch up on 50 years of capitalism that they had missed out on, it's an exciting story. But these markets have had a spectacular run, and I think it's a dangerous time now, because these are thin markets, and frankly, I'd be shifting out of that region if I had positions. I'd be using the strength that I would expect between now and the into the first quarter of 2005 to be lightening up there, because of the possibility, the strong possibility, that we do see some sort of reasonably significant medium-term correction in 2006. Now, another red-hot area of emerging markets has been the so-called petrodollar markets. These are the Middle Eastern markets, and this spills over also into North Africa. And these have had absolutely spectacular moves. These among stock markets around the world, these are the clearest examples of bubbles, and it's very, very dangerous. But as long as the petro money is sloshing around and the rest of the world hasn't gone into a significant downtrend, these bubbles can inflate even further, and that's what's likely to be the case. If you think the price of oil is going to be dropping down to $35, $40, as many people are forecasting, then I'd be out of those markets in a shot. And I'm not. There's so many good stories around that I don't need that one. But it has been a very good story. It is almost entirely due to the massive surplus of petrodollars, as I've already mentioned. Okay, let's move on now from the stock market cycle into government bonds. You know my view. I've maintained really since June 2003 that the global bond market secular bull trend ended back in June 2003, and that we're in the extensive top formation development phase. And when we next get a significant sell-off in global stock markets, government bonds will no doubt get a reasonable technical rally, and that'll then create a shorting opportunity. My strategy for the long term is to sell those government bonds after we see rallies tire. I've done that on a number of occasions in the last couple of years. It's never all that easy because when you are in a topping phase, and I'm talking about bond prices, so the flip side of that would be base formations in the yields, long dated government bond yields. It's fairly tricky when you have those big ranging problems. It's one has to be doing more shorter to medium term trading than most of us would prefer to do. But I think the long term outlook, as you know, is that we will see yields rising over the next 10-15 years as inflationary pressures do pick up, and it will be not any sort of linear trend, but we'll see. It'll be an irregular trend where we'll see yields move upwards as we get the sell-offs in bonds, and yields will move higher than they did in the previous medium-term rally, and then they'll come off again, but they'll bottom. Yields will bottom above the lows that they had seen in the previous medium-term sell-off in government bonds. It'll be that type of overall trend. We do not want to be long-term investors in government bonds. We want to stay away or just look for short-selling opportunities if you're a trader. Now, moving on to the currencies. And the really interesting story here right now is what's going to happen to the dollar. How much higher is it going to go in this current move before that secular bear trend reasserts itself? And of course, the higher it goes, the fewer people there are who actually think that it is still in a secular bear trend. Well, my hunch is that the low that we saw down on the dollar index around 80 was near as damn it the floor area. Maybe it gets down to below that 80 and down to 78 or so, 77, something like that. But we're not talking about a big difference there. But that we are in the overall bottoming out process. My view also is that and I had to adjust this view because I thought probably we'd seen the highs at around the 90 level. But that was assuming that we weren't going to see a breakthrough. And once we got a breakthrough, that 90, clear breakthrough, that 90 level, then I had to become sort of a nervous dollar bull again for a little bit more on the upside. And that's still my current position. But what you want to know, though, is why would this change, and how would it actually change? And one of the key factors, and people are starting to talk about this, and I've mentioned it before, it's all about interest rate expectations. Those are the only hard fundamentals in currencies. Okay, people say, well, what about the deficits and so on? Well, you know, you get the dollar rising against a background of rising deficits, and you can also see the dollar fall against a background of rising deficits. What really counts here is the interest rate play. And the dollar got sandbagged when U.S. interest rates were coming down so persistently and so far, and the U.S. dollar has been strengthening, albeit with a delayed response, as the U.S. interest rate cycle has carried higher. So when we do get perceptions that the widespread perceptions that that's it in terms of interest rates, and we'll probably get the Fed announcing that at some stage, I think then the dollar is going to really be quite vulnerable. It may be choppy action for a while, it may range, because it will still have higher interest rates than the developed than currencies in most of the other developed countries. So that doesn't mean, when they do announce that the U.S. rates are high enough, I would expect a sharp reaction, but it not necessarily the beginning of the bigger downtrend, taking the U.S. dollar index from its current level in the low 90s back down to 80. That may take a little bit longer, but would certainly coincide with the next phase of lower U.S. short-term interest rates. And I'm not going to try to guess when that's going to start. It could start next year, though, if the U.S. economy does soften as many people expect. It's a real possibility, but it's certainly not guaranteed. But the key thing to remember is that the dollar rally will certainly be in its final and dangerous phase, as and when perceptions shift towards a belief that we've seen all the rises that we're going to get in short-term interest rates, and the next bearish phase will coincide with a downward trajectory in those U.S. short-term interest rates, which of course are controlled by the U.S. Federal Reserve. Now, the hard currencies, not surprisingly, it's not going to be the euro. First, interest rates aren't going to go up that much, if at all. Although the ECB is talking tough at the moment, it's not going to be the Swiss franc. Beyond short covering rallies, it's really going to be the resources currencies, the developed country resources currencies, and so that's the Canadian dollar, top of my list, and also the Australian dollar, New Zealand dollar, and then some of the petro currencies, such as the Norwegian crown, when the oil price starts to pick up again. Those are the ones that I would expect to be really quite firm. What about the Asian currencies? Because that's such a good growth story. Well, of course, they're not letting their currencies appreciate against the U.S. dollar, and I think that. I'll make an additional connection in here that the yen, which has effectively no yield, will still invite the carry trade. In other words, people borrowing yen and putting it into dollars or Canadian, whether they're US dollars or Australian dollars or Canadian dollars. And that will really go on, I think, for a while longer. And that is, of course, very good news for the Japanese stock market and for the export earnings in Japan. And so the government will be delighted to see the yen remain relatively soft. The government is keen to see some inflation, and it's still not clear that there is much inflation. We're just beginning to get a little bit of asset. And well, it would be an exaggeration to call it inflation, but at least the assets are appreciating, as in the stock market and the property market, rather than continuing lower. And so that soft yen is another key factor here in the strong Japanese stock market equation. Okay, I think I'm getting pretty well near the end of this longish broadcast, but I haven't said enough about the well, I probably have said enough about the resources. Again, it's a combination of supply and elasticity and unprecedented demand overall. The best of the resources, beg your pardon, the best of the energy stories remains uranium. And a number of those uranium shares appear to be in the latter stages of pretty lengthy consolidation. So we might get some good performances there during the remainder of this year, or improving performances during the remainder of the year. Red hot one is the Inco situation. I think that looks very attractive, assuming I'm right on the nickel price move. And among the industrial metals, I wouldn't be surprised if nickel gets the best percentage gain going forward in here, because it's been the odd man out along with tin. Tin, I don't see any evidence that that's turned yet, although it's very close to a bottom area in my view. And agricultural commodities, the only way to play this sector, and this has always been the only way to play the sector that I really know of, is you get interested when they get hammered down, and then you look for some upward dynamics to indicate that you're starting to get a turn, or at least a short covering rally, and they provide trading opportunities. That grain and bean complex, there's some exciting things on the horizon. The attempt to forget the terminology they actually use on this, but to create to create energy with these, that will be a source of demand. Ditto for sugar. We also have the vagaries of weather and the crop disturbances that will cause, or the yield problems that will cause from time to time, which will produce some moves on the upside. But it's a fairly tricky area, and since we as investors and traders really should think of ourselves as judges in an international beauty contest, I think the siren call in the agricultural commodities will not be anywhere near as loud or clear or persistent as it will be in the industrial commodities and in the emerging markets and in the Japan and South Korea and in the developed country resources markets. That's it, folks. Have an absolutely splendid weekend. All the best.